Good afternoon, everyone. Apologize for the delay. We have a public hearing that we will hold on 5:43, and we will not take action on SB 212 today. We won't hear that. So, first, are you, we're only doing yours.
I'll go last.
Okay, good. Before that, we've got a sign-up sheet, and Kyle Easton is here to give us a brief summary of Senate Bill 543.
Okay, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 543 is a measure that would authorize, this is related to property tax, authorize the formation of children's special districts, and it would provide those districts with the authority to assess, levy, and collect taxes. And they can use those to pay the cost of the children's services within the district. And children's services is defined as services that support children's total health and well-being that are provided to children outside of school hours. So again, this wouldn't create any of these special districts. It's just creating the statute that would allow these districts to be created. There is language in there requiring the district to discontinue a project. So whatever the district is doing or spending the funds on, if an action is filed that's claiming that the revenue of the district is being used on the education side of the Measure 5 property tax limits. So if the district is using something that'd be subject to the Measure 5 limits or subject to compression on the education side rather than the general government side, it would force the district to cease doing that and spend those dollars in a different manner so as to not hit on that education side of the constitutional limit.
Right.
Okay, let's begin with Toby Wynn.
Thank you for having me here today, Mr. Chair Haas and the rest of you. I drove in from Depot Bay, and my name is Toby Wynn, Executive Director of an organization called Neighbors for Kids. Again, we're in Depot Bay, which is in Lincoln County, Oregon. We're known as the world's smallest harbor. The reasoning I'm here today is that myself and our organization were in full support of Senate Bill 543 and making the Children's Service Districts a reality. Our reality is, myself and many other nonprofits, is that we're in great need of sustainable funding, like the dollars that could be generated from something like this. There's hundreds of nonprofits, as we know, across the state of Oregon, and we compete for very limited resources. A lot of those resources are grants from private foundations as well as other sources. So we're looking for a district, a children's services district like this to support our important work. One of our board members says that how we do this is every year we literally raise every penny as we go. We have peaks and valleys in our budget, and unfortunately there's many organizations who literally cannot sustain themselves with the funding sources available. So this ends up closing their doors, and in turn that ends up losing that resource for the community despite its amazing impact it could have on the children and families there. So most importantly, why I'm here today is to advocate for the people we serve, which is children. And as we know, they're the Oregon's youngest residents. They're our next generation, and it's very important to invest in them. We feel as an organization, it's our social responsibility to protect and keep our kids safe and educate our children and give them a safe haven, a place to be. For us on the coast, we're not immune to many of the same risk factors as the metro and cities. In Oregon, our elementary school, our largest feeder school, has a 95% free and reduced lunch rate currently. And now we have over 1,000 children in our school district that are categorized as experiencing homelessness and lack of stable housing. So the coast has the same risk factors among the families we serve as any large city in Oregon at this point. So the largest growing population too we see are children with extreme and significant behavioral, emotional, and mental health needs in our program. So we're trying to develop the capacity to be able to serve these kids after the bell rings and throughout the summer. We find it highly important. So I just ask you today to consider looking at approving this bill, and together we can support the future generations of Oregonians here. And I thank you for your time, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Any questions for Toby Wynn?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Say hello to everybody in Depot Bay.
I will.
Katie Riley, please.
Chair Haas and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me the time to speak today. I'm here representing a group called Washington County Kids, which is a nonprofit in Washington County. We're a coalition of about 27, 28 different organizations that provide direct service. We do not provide direct service ourselves, but we try to educate people regarding the need for out-of-school time programs for kids, which includes early childhood, after-school, and summer programs. And there is a great need for these kind of programs to be expanded. Senate Bill 543 would allow us to advocate for that kind of a situation where we could get sustainable funding that would support some of the existing programs and also help to expand programs. We do have programs in existence, but geography is sometimes dispersed. People have problems in access due to cost, transportation, lack of information, and then the hours that they work are oftentimes not in consistent with the hours that these programs are operating. For instance, one of the programs that we know of that is subsidized by the city of Hillsboro, they do not start their after-school program until a month after school starts, and it ends a month before school ends. And also the hours are end at 5 o'clock, and they still have a long waiting list. People have been going to sign up at 4:30 in the morning in order to get their child in those kind of, in those programs. So there are waiting lists. Even the early childhood programs, Head Start and Early Head Start in our county, only cover maybe about 19-20% of kids who are eligible and meet the federal poverty guidelines. So there is a large need to expand support for these out-of-school time programs and provide sustainable funding. And these programs work. We know that kids who participate in them do better in school and also on into life. And so we really want to help support those kids. And we know that Oregon has a problem. We are toward the bottom of states in terms of graduation rates. These kind of programs can help kids succeed, and we really want to see them succeed. It also strengthens families, because the money that is freed up by kids being in these kind of programs helps the families be able to find more housing that is more affordable to them, because their finances are freed up from having to pay as much in childcare. I want to address a concern that has been brought to my attention, that we already have a lot of programs. We do have a number of programs, but they don't cover all kids. And for instance, like in Tualatin Hills Park and Recreation Program, they currently offer 3 sites of after-school programs. But the people who have care in those 3 sites have to pay. They have to pay additional, in addition to their taxes going into the Tualatin Hills Park and Recreation District. So even those programs could use some extra help. This is all very important. The kids can get homework help. They can get other kinds of support. Homework help is not what they get in school. It's giving them an extra support, an extra boost. It's not following the school curriculum. So this is different. Multnomah County, and I understand that Gresham has objected to this bill and are concerned about it because of expansion of possibly the Portland Children's Levy at that time. However, this is really, if this bill does not mandate that anybody should have a children's service district, it only allows it. And Portland and Multnomah County have subsidized a lot of their different programs already. However, there are other places that do not have this kind of support, such as Washington County, Lincoln County, a lot of other locations throughout the state. So in closing, I would just like to say I hope that you will support passage of this bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much. Any questions for Katie Riley? Any questions that may be in the form of a Valentine?
Well, you can see her earrings.
Yes.
Okay. It's Valentine's Day.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Eric Chambers.
Chair Hass and members of the committee, my name is Eric Chambers, representing the city of Gresham. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today to share a few of our perspectives about Senate Bill 543. I think first and foremost, we would say that we are lockstep behind the ambition of this bill. The desire to provide additional services for children is very consistent with the values of our mayor and council, and we would love to see the state get there with a vehicle that works to be able to enhance services in that arena. For a number of reasons, we're concerned that this isn't the best way to get there, and I'll describe those concerns now. I think the first and primary concern that the city of Gresham has is the impact that this legislation would have on compression, in particular now that the bill attempts to define itself out of Measure 5 compression, which would put the full brunt of the burden on the general government side. For context, that's your cities, counties, Metro, Port of Portland, your general government taxing districts. We tried to work to get a scope of magnitude for the committee in terms of what that would look like on our level. Had this bill been in place in the 2013-14 tax year, the city of Gresham alone would have seen about $840,000 in losses as a result of the Children's District if it were at a rate of $1 per thousand. Again, for context, 100% of the city of Gresham's property tax revenues by policy go to police and fire services, so there would be direct cuts to public safety from those losses. Even in a good tax year, the 2017 tax year, we would have seen compression losses at a dollar rate at about $420,000. So there's a very real impact in terms of those general government taxing jurisdictions in terms of how this would work. And we would urge the committee, before doing anything with this bill, to have the Legislative Revenue Office examine those compression impacts and how they might impact other government jurisdictions. Again, Multnomah County has an even higher permanent rate than Gresham does, so the impact on Multnomah County's revenues could be very consistent or very substantial as well. The second issue that we have, and I appreciate Mr. Riley's testimony in regards to the Portland levy, there are some quirky things that happen in Multnomah County, and again, I think this committee is familiar with those from House Bill 2088 in the last session. And what we see because of the vast differences in permanent rates, I mean, Portland's tax rate is about $723 per thousand, on including their police and fire disability. Gresham's is about half that at $361. So Gresham has more room in the compression window than Portland does, and the net result of that is that when new taxing jurisdictions are added to the docket, Gresham disproportionately pays at a substantially higher rate. When the Multnomah County Library District was passed in 2013, for example, the city of Gresham saw 100% of tax residential tax accounts see an increase in their taxes, an average burden of $52 a year. In Portland, 48% of households saw a tax increase with an average burden of about $24 a year. So immediately, the way that the financial mechanism in this case would work would cause pretty substantial inequities even within the county. And again, I do appreciate that the children's levy in Portland is on the books and children's services are better funded in Multnomah County than in other places. But the suggestion that folks in Portland wouldn't like to see that the services funded through a mechanism that would have somebody else disproportionately pay for the services is probably inconsistent with the way that we might see things go. I think if they had the opportunity to pass a countywide district, they would certainly seek to do so. And again, because of the population distribution in Multnomah County, they would have the political power to do that, even if voters in Gresham and East County objected to it. So when we talk about our concerns with the vehicle, like, those are the nuts and bolts of why this would be really problematic in our specific area. I think additionally, another weakness of this particular approach to get there is the exemption that it has on education services. I appreciate the gentleman from Depot Bay who testified, and I appreciate even more that he's providing the services services that he described in my home county of Lincoln County. But on his letterhead, they mention literacy education, music lessons, science, visual arts, and computer technology, all of which would probably be exempted from this bill because of the Measure 5 language that it possesses. So when we're thinking about the effectiveness of these districts to achieve outcomes for children, exempting anything of educational value under the Measure 5 compression window would immediately weaken the effectiveness of the districts. I think the last thing that we would note is there's language in Section 5 of the bill that gives the district, the proposed district, the opportunity to determine the amount of taxation that it needs to levy on an annual basis and then collect that amount in taxes, which, if we're talking about a permanent property tax rate, may put the bill in direct conflict with the property tax limitations in Measure 50. So I think before moving the bill, we would just ask that, again, some additional analysis be conducted in terms of those compression impacts. And then also, if we can get some clarification on whether or not that language in Section 5 is a violation of Measure 50, I think would be helpful for the committee as well. And with that, I thank you for the opportunity to share our perspectives. We're ready to work on an alternative. We laud the ambition of this bill, and if we can figure out a way to get there that doesn't hit that permanent property tax side, I think the city would be lockstep in support.
Thank you, Eric. How did you compute the $840,000 and $400,000 figure?
Chair Haas, members of the committee, thank you for that question. Our budget revenue staff used the same rate modeling, and we have Multnomah County's assessment data each year, although in 18 we don't have it yet because they're doing the turnover to their new assessment software. But in previous tax years, we have the same data that they have, so we can run rate modeling and impacts in Gresham. And then additionally, we have the very real experience of the Multnomah County Library District, which was put on the books at $1.20 a thousand. So for a magnitude of scale, we have, again, both that rate modeling that we use, and then we have a very real experience of something actually happening and knowing what the impact of that was.
Okay. Senator Riley.
So my understanding is that the ask would be nowhere near a dollar, so your scale is way off, but I understand where you're coming from. You had to pick something. But unfortunately, you picked something way higher than anybody's thinking about.
Chair Haas, Senator Riley, I mean, I think one of the problems is we don't know what any district might ask. In Washington County, that may be very well different than the intent, but Multnomah County could have a different experience. And if there is an opportunity, again, I appreciate that Multnomah County is differently situated than Washington County. And if there's an opportunity to look at having this legislation apply to counties that have fewer than 700,000 in population or something like that, we could certainly explore those opportunities as well.
Senator Boquist?
Certainly. Certainly. I'm just curious. I mean, I think I've seen this bill five times.
Three.
Okay. It's not like it's a new idea. Obviously not like I didn't think it was going to come this session either. And I appreciate you coming up and raising the issues, but it was here last session and passed out of the Senate and went to the far side. And what it fundamentally does, in my understanding, and unless you can correct me, is it allows a group of people in a given area, whether it be a county or something, to realize that they're not providing all of the services that they believe they should for their children and form a district and move forward. So it's not like it's automatic. So I guess I'm struggling with the deal of where you said it would have impacted you, because you're admitting that you don't have enough children's services in the city of Gresham, because you said there would have been one of these districts. And so therefore it would have impacted us this way. So is it the city of Gresham's not responding to the needs of its people and isn't able to do that? You see where I'm going here?
Sure.
The question is you've already said it would impact you, which already means you just admitted you don't have the children's services that you need. So help me out here.
You bet. Senator Haas, Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, I wouldn't want to suggest that Gresham doesn't provide children's services. In the last 5 years, we've redoubled our summer recreation programming. We've attracted a Boys and Girls Club to locate on city-owned land in the city. We've done the same with Friends of the Children, locating on city-owned land, and Family of Friends mentoring program. We've definitely put an onus on this. What I was attempting to suggest is that to get an idea of scope of magnitude, if one of these were in place, what would the consequences be on our public safety services as a direct result of general government compression? And so I think the question here isn't whether or not the city is providing ample children's services, it's would voters in Multnomah County approve one of these? And again, because of the political dynamic in Portland where they could approve something like this and disproportionately collect the revenue for it in Gresham if it were a countywide district, then we have some concern about, again, what that impact would be downstream on our police and fire services.
Interesting. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps you can enlighten me on the section. It's actually, I think, must be page 2, line 5. It gives the district the power to assess, levy, and collect taxes. Does that mean, then, that the board has that power without a vote? I don't understand how these districts work. So.
Senator Benz, that's an extremely good question, and we would love to see some clarification on what that looks like. Generally speaking, when property taxing jurisdictions are put in place, the permanent rate has to be approved by voters initially. The language, I think, in that section leaves that question fairly open. And then again, the language in Section 5 presents probably an even more consequential question about whether or not the board being able to choose the appropriate level of taxation is a violation of Measure 50.
So, Senator Benz,
thank you. So the measure 50 part, this is the third time the bill's been through, and has that been analyzed before in this previous lives of this bill?
Chair Haas, Senator Benz, I don't know the answer to that question. I don't specifically recall that language in previous efforts, but I know that there have been a lot of different ways that this vehicle has been cast.
Thank you.
Senator Riley. Okay. Thank you, Eric. James Barta.
Thank you, Chair Haas, members of the committee. My name is James Barta. I'm the strategic director for Children First for Oregon, where we're representing the interests of the 880,000 children in the state, and we hope we can build a state where children can thrive. And I want to thank the members of this committee who returned from 2017, who supported this legislation previously, as already mentioned. While I'm not going to go into the technical details, I will say that there are two main reasons why I think it's important for you to pass this legislation once again. First of all, it's the needs of children throughout the state, whether it's Multnomah County, whether it's Eastern Oregon, whether it's the coast, are immense. You know, there's a report that was on the news on several broadcasts just today about the fact that we have child care deserts throughout the state. In fact, there's only 3 counties that are not, by definition, a desert. And a desert means that there's only 1 child care slot available for every 3 children who are eligible for it. And there's certainly a need for after-school programs and all these different things that need to be discussed, which takes me to my second point, that voters should have the option. Voters can decide whether this can join the list of the 27 other service districts to determine whether they feel the needs of children in their area need a response. And many of these areas are not under compression, anything like that, but they still will have that option. And that by itself, just that discussion is something, as a children's advocate, I'm excited about, that people will start discussing the needs of whether it's childcare or after school programs or whatever. So it's for those two reasons and others that Children First for Oregon supports Senate Bill 543.
Thank you, James. Questions?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I'm here on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Our association represents approximately 940 districts, providing single services to the citizens of Oregon, including fire, parks and rec, library services, to name just a few. At the outset, I want to compliment Senator Riley and his wife for what they're attempting to do here. I think that we can all agree that the services being provided to the children of our state of Oregon certainly could be enhanced, and we're supportive of that. However, the tool to do so, as contained in Senate Bill 543, we believe has a number of flaws, and as a result, our association is opposed. I've appeared before this committee. This is the third time on this measure, and I won't take much of your time because I have spoken about this issue in the past. But I will briefly highlight the concerns that we do have. At the outset, we are concerned about the duplication of existing services. Another significant problem for our association, as was mentioned previously, and Mr. Chambers did a very nice job of it, was discussing the compressionary impacts that this could have. I think we can all agree that one of the fundamental challenges that we have with this is the property tax system rather than the bill itself. So I would like to make that point perfectly clear. Another issue that I would like to draw your attention to, if I may, is found on page 2 of the bill, section 2, sub B. And I'd like to just briefly review that with you. Under that section, it states that if an action is filed claiming that any revenue of a children's service district is subject to the $5 limitation of real market value, I'm skipping to line 17 now, the children's service district shall discontinue the project and shall instead use the revenue for a project that does not constitute education services. The challenge with this is that it states, if an action is filed claiming, that claim does not have to be substantiated in any way, shape, or form. And as a result, the district has to stop spending that money. So as an example, if you have somebody who, in fact, voted against the Children's Services District being established and is upset, all that individual has to do is continue to file claims. And by the way, we don't know where those claims have to be filed, whether it's with the Children's Services District, with the county court, or with the question just remains open, where do you file this claim? But the language specifically says the district must stop spending that money, whether or not the claim has merit or not. As a result, somebody could literally paralyze the district in expending any of the funds that have been raised by the Children's Service District. To continue, I mentioned that 543 points out the problems with our property taxes, property tax system, but we remain concerned that this bill creates duplication, further complicates our property tax system, could exacerbate compression for general government, and as a result, our association is opposed to the measure, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Questions for Mr. Landauer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just ask the same question I asked earlier. Do you think that to raise taxes, the board would have to go to the people, or can they do it by board action?
Chair Hass, Senator Bentz, clearly the bill requires that the citizens form the district. However, in your typical formation of a district, as Mr. Chambers had mentioned, the permanent tax rate is also voted upon at that time. In this case, it's unclear whether or not the voters would in fact have the opportunity to set a permanent rate. I think that that would be a plus to the bill by requiring the district to set a permanent rate at the time of formation. That would be consistent with other district statutes, but this bill does not speak to that, and so it remains an open-ended question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Johnson.
Chair Chair Haas, members of the committee, Wendy Johnson here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. As you know, the League represents 241 cities. Each of our cities has a different property tax situation. And I think it's interesting that we're talking about property taxes when this bill doesn't actually use the word property taxes anywhere in it. But the reason we're concerned is Section 4 of the bill does provide this new special district with the authority. It's in paragraph 4, to assess, levy, and collect taxes. So that presumably includes property taxes, and then it's in the special districts chapter. So that authority to levy taxes is our concern, because as you know, in Oregon, we have Measure 5, and Measure 5 says anytime we do a levy, we have to categorize, is it under the Measure 5 limit for education, or is it under the Measure 5 limit for local government? The Constitution says that we have to make that categorization. And this is the fourth time this bill has been up. And we all know that the $5 limit for kids, for the education number, almost every district is at that cap. 90-something percent of the school districts are at that cap. So this is the fourth time for it. Each time we're trying to deal with this issue of, well, if we're going to issue property taxes, we cannot make it apply to that $5 because no one could do it. So you're trying to force education, something for kids, into the local government bucket. And the court has said you still have to categorize what the service is to decide which bucket it goes in. So we're many older versions tried to say what the district would provide, and this does generally, but it's trying to force it into the $10 bucket. But the new thing for this session is this provision saying, well, you just need to make a claim, and if you make a claim, then we'll stop the service immediately. But you can't change the Constitution. The Constitution says we have to, when you issue the levy, they have to decide which bucket it's going to be in. And so this, adding this new provision to try to stop it from going into the $5 bucket can't do it. You're going to look at how the levy goes out, and you're going to actually look at what the services are that are provided. And so I'm sorry to disappoint the school folks who hope that this will come out of the won't come out of the $5. You can't do that with this legislation. You can now try to stop it, the money from going out the door anymore, but you still have to make that determination. And the Orr housing case, that came out of the Oregon Supreme Court in 2006, makes that analysis. And I find it ironic because in that situation, it was the city of Eugene who tried to do a levy to help out the education community. And the court said, you can't call it local government when it's not, when you're providing services to only children for after, it was after school projects and such. It was, you have to make the distinction, and they had to bifurcate the levy. And the court, the tax court said you got to refund the money that wasn't properly categorized, and the Oregon Supreme Court affirmed. So there are some things that perhaps could go under local government, but those are things that, as my colleagues have previously said, can already be done. A city can provide services, or a recreational district can provide services. But a lot of these things that have been, you know, requested that this new children's district do are still going to be considered education, and they still have to go under the $5. I agree with my of the folks that came up earlier that it's not clear how you, what this claim is. It doesn't say where you file it or with whom. So that is an issue as well. But fundamentally, our issue is our, Ms. O'Reilly, the proponent, said they're looking for sustainable funding. Everybody's looking for sustainable funding, and our property tax system is the epitome of not sustainable. We're stuck at these Measure 5 limits from 1995. And we can't pay for local governments or schools. And so to put another type of district onto these limits is not sustainable for anyone. There are some communities who could still impose a property tax because they're not at the limits. And Depot Bay is the poster child because they have no property tax in the city. So they have room there. But this would be a one size fits all that it would allow this district in every community and put, if there's a new district created, and you do go out to the voters for a permanent rate, it compresses everybody else's, even if it was a permanent rate. Local options are done first, and so many communities are local options on their public safety. Those folks would all lose. So it's frustrating because it's not a sustainable system. And as you know, this session, one of our key issues is housing. And cities are on the hook for that. And we have to have property tax dollars to do infrastructure if you're ever gonna get housing. So if you're gonna take more dollars from us, it's just, we can't do both. We can't keep adding on to the cost of what the city is supposed to provide. It's duplicative. We've got to do the categorization. And lastly, I think that the Constitution and other provisions would require, to answer Senator Benz's question, would require a vote on the permanent rate. But I'm not sure on the question of an obligation bond. I don't know if this district has bond authority or not. I think I would need analysis on that. I think they could do a permanent rate, a tax, but I don't know about bonds, because, and that's an important issue, because bonds are outside of the Measure 5 limits. And this bill, unlike other bills that create new special districts, usually tells you whether you have that authority to do a general obligation bond. So I think that's an unanswered question that I think we should know before this legislation moves. But with that, I just would like to emphasize that this is creating competition amongst districts that we already have, and duplicates and puts us all into competition on an unsustainable system. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Wendy. Marsha Kelly.
Chair Hass and members of the committee, I'm Marsha Kelly with the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition. I'm their public policy advocate. I too have concerns about the bill. I'll bring up a couple of different points than have been stated before about the questions about where the money would come from. If you look at page 2 of the bill, under section 2, sub A and then sub B, it places the formation of the district under the same special district statutes, but it says that in this case, the district does not need to have 15% of the voters sign a petition to form the district. It reduces that down to 10%. So if you're talking about forming a district in Washington County, it would mean a difference between collecting 53,500 signatures and 35,600 signatures, according to the registered voters in Washington County. And even if you excluded those voters who might be in the Tualatin Hills Recreation District, there's still quite a variation. It would be 30,000 versus 20,000. Wearing another hat, or having knowledge of wearing another hat, as I am a board member of a special district, the other concern that I have is that we're trying to get dollars to children's programs. For every, if Washington County is like Marion County, every time the district has an election for board members or for money, that district pays those dollars to the county elections to conduct the elections. So that's taking money out. I would hope that rather than setting up another district that could compete under the general government with fire, parks, libraries in some of those cities, that there could be some creative way of finding money that is not going to be tied up with the administration costs of doing things like elections. Yeah. And having two bodies go against each other. The other thing is, if under the section somebody files something in court against the district, that's court costs. I would hope that we could look to some way of funding services for kids, which I'm hoping we're going to be doing in other committees, funding services for kids that do not create special districts that could be more unevenly funded across the state.
Questions? Thank you, Marsha. And Senator O'Reilly, we will give you the last word.
Thank you, Chair Hass, members of the committee. Senator Chuck Riley from Senate District 15, Hillsborough, Corneas, Forest Grove, North Plains, and Roy and Verbort, and some small farms. So there are a lot of questions, and I'm going to try to answer those as best I can. One of the questions was about where something we filed, the I wanted to say what the legislative intent is in this bill is that it's filed in county court. And I understand that someone with vile intentions could do bad things. And that happens all the time to all sorts of things. We're hoping that vile people won't try to do bad things. I know that's an interesting hope, but they would have to pay to file. And the reason we don't insist on the claim being carried forward is the cost of fighting that claim. It's we're hopeful that we don't have to go back and change this. At some point we might, but that's the answer to that. The intent is for that to be filed in county court. The district does not intend to do any educational programs. We will simply do programs that enhance children's lives. And hopefully we'll be able to at the same time, keep kids involved during the summer, especially, so that they're not losing their ability to have activity. They're not sitting around playing video games and walking the streets. We want to have them doing something productive, something that enhances their lives other than these sedentary things. So one of the things was duplicitous nature of this, and in fact there is none. We don't intend for these districts to actually provide services. The intent is to find and fund services, and some of those services that are already existing that don't have the capacity and have to charge way too much money for each of their programs, we would like to support some of those programs that already exist. For instance, and I don't want to call out something just because it happens to be one of the ones I know about, and that's THPRD, the Tualatin Valley Parks and Rec District. They do great work. They have some great programs. But they don't have the capacity. There's a waiting list. Every program they have has a waiting list. And they charge a lot of money that people don't have. We want to be able to have those kids who don't have the money to be able to have these programs. To be honest, THPRD does have some tuition help, but unfortunately they only do 1 month of a year for their tuition, so that leaves another 11 months with kids who have nothing to do. So, and again, there is no program in the state that has the capacity or even the aim of serving all children. We come nowhere near to serving all the kids who need that service. As I stated earlier, even the programs that have funding don't have enough funding. They don't have enough capacity. We need to build that capacity and lower the cost for the people who can't afford it. As far as bonding, I think that's a great idea. I think that's something that we might want to put in. I think that was something maybe we could add in the House before it goes to the House and put in an amendment after this leaves the Senate. I think with that, I'll wrap up. If you have any other questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Senator Boquist?
I don't have a comment at the end, but no question.
Okay, thank you, Senator Riley.
Mm-hmm. I'll
let you come back up here. That wraps up our testimony. for today. Senator Boquist?
I just have a comment, because, I mean, one of the interesting, the 241 cities, and I have a bunch of cities in my district, obviously, but the number one issue is housing. And because of the housing, there's this crisis, which is true, and the cities need to address it. And I sort of reckon back to the same problem I saw in the transportation bill, because all the cities, you know, have all these issues. One of the biggest problems we have in the transportation bill is getting the cities and counties to be accountable for the funds that they got. And in the transportation bill, what we did is we put in some metrics and said, you've got to make sure if you're getting transportation dollars, they go to transportation. And I can tell you that, I mean, there is another member of this chamber that was in the House of Representatives at the time, and I can tell you there was more than enough wine and cheese to go around in this argument, because it was just totally impossible to be able to be accountable for these funds. And we just put in sort of, okay, you don't not accountable, you don't get the funds. Next time around, you just don't get them. It's, if you're city X or Y and you don't meet the requirements, then when the tax increase comes, you don't get it. It's amazing the accountability that came around. In fact, just not more than 4 days ago, I believe we have 100% participation in the accountability program that's there. And I sort of raised that issue because this particular bill doesn't create a magic new district. It allows the people to sort of go out and do it. And the crutch that was utilized here was the housing crutch that's out here. And we just passed housing sustainment, housing support bill. So I didn't see the other word across here. But I haven't seen one city reduce their system development charges. I haven't seen one city expand or do any of the other things that were raised by both majority and the minority on the Senate floor that we could do to improve the housing situation in those places. And so I sort of look at this bill as, okay, everybody who's getting money now is opposed to it. It seems pretty obvious if there isn't a need, not one of these districts will ever be formed. And if there is a need and the people want to vote on it, then they should have the opportunity to vote on it. So, I mean, I did not support this the first time around, did I? I don't think so. And I supported it last time around. And I see this as an opportunity, if they want to repair it, but I do see it as an opportunity for people to address the issue. Because everybody's always, well, let's go help the children except us. Let's go help the children except us. And if a group of people want to get together and do it, it seems logical to me, as citizens, we should allow them to get together and do it. And then, unfortunately, if it does create the crisis, then maybe we can do something with 5 or 50 when a crisis comes. Because I don't think the crisis is here. Because I don't think there's enough intestinal fortitude to overhaul 5 and 50 even this session. So maybe we need to create the crisis. This might help.
Okay. I think someone said, maybe it was Mark Landauer, that part of our problem here is a property tax problem. It's as much as the need, and that resonates with me too. So that's all we have for today. LR Officer Alanek, anything else? Okay, thank you all. We are adjourned.